Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Friday, June 7th. I'm Stephen Overly. Clean technologies. That's something President Joe Biden has made a big bet on. Billions and billions of dollars for investments in green infrastructure and for tax breaks on electric vehicles and clean energy production. And Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey has gone after every dollar she can get. Plus, she wants to pour $1 billion of the state's own money into climate tech over the next decade. At a climate tech conference in Boston earlier this week, Governor Healey said she was confident there would be a big payoff. And in a call with me, she doubled down that climate tech is all opportunity, no hype. But there is a risk that the Democratic governor worries about. And that, of course, is the return of former President Donald Trump. On the show today, Governor Healey defends the big bet on climate tech and argues more voters should think about it at the ballot box in November. Here's our conversation. Governor Healey, thanks for joining us on Politico Tech.
Great to be with you.
You know, I talk to a lot of folks about climate tech. I hear a lot of promise and I hear a lot of hype. In your job as governor, how do you distinguish between the two?
Well, I think climate tech is a huge opportunity. I mean, we know that we need to decarbonize the way we do so many things, whether it's in our transportation or manufacturing or housing, because there's an imperative to reduce the emissions that we have, not just here in America, but around the world. And so for me, you know, when we think about climate, we know it is a huge problem. And so we know we need to act. But as governor, I am choosing to view this as an opportunity. And what do I mean by that? Well, concretely, I want to make Massachusetts the climate tech capital of the world, because all of the technologies that we're going to need, Stephen, to decarbonize our planet, to decarbonize housing and transportation and manufacturing, the strategies that we're going to need for climate mitigation, for building out resilience, the new technologies, think of solar and wind and batteries and storage. All of that is what I refer to as climate technology. And Massachusetts, because of our research and our ecosystem of entrepreneurship and innovation and technology, we're just perfectly poised to take on that leadership role.
Well, I know you're betting big on that idea, and you were speaking at a climate tech conference earlier this week. One of the comments you made there was that for Massachusetts, investing in these clean technologies will come with a huge payoff. I think you said a 12-to-1 return on investment. What makes you so sure of that?
Because I've already seen it in play here in our state. I've spent time over the last year and a half that I've been on this job touring and visiting so many companies around Massachusetts. And I'll tell you exactly what I'm talking about. We're talking about companies that are making green steel. We know that steel production accounts for significant greenhouse gas emissions. So wouldn't it be best if we found a way to make steel that was still strong and did the job, but do so in a way that's green? We've got the company here in Massachusetts that is doing that. We've got the company here in Massachusetts that's making green cement. We've got companies that are working on electric hydrogen and that are working on building fuel cells that will have the capacity for energy storage and battery storage. So these are companies that have seen major venture capital investment that have been started, many of them through our academic research centers, including MIT and some of our other colleges and universities. And they're already making money and doing great things. So that's why I know it's going to have a huge ROI. 12-to-1, we estimate that our proposed $1 billion investment over 10 years is going to yield about $16 billion in GDP and thousands of jobs.
I want to talk about that investment and sort of the path to capitalize on this technology. I know that you've proposed a $1 billion plan for investing in climate tech over the next 10 years. For those who may not have followed, it includes things like $400 million for research and commercialization, $300 million in tax credits to attract and retain business. The Massachusetts legislature is considering that now. They have a very crowded agenda. How do you get lawmakers to focus on this?
Well, I think it's really through a process of education and getting people up to speed and on board with an understanding of what this industry is all about. I mean, as we speak, the clean energy industry right now in Massachusetts is about a $33 billion a year industry currently. It supports over 200,000 jobs, and the majority of those are actually considered small businesses. So we've sort of seen already what climate technology and clean energy technology looks like in Massachusetts. But I think it's getting people up to speed on how so many of these technologies can be scaled and then used, not just in the United States, but around the world, and why this is such a market. We also are building not from scratch. Remember, we're the state where, as governor, I appointed the first ever climate chief. And my climate chief sits atop my administration and makes sure that we're thinking about climate and driving a climate agenda through transportation and housing and health and human services and infrastructure. I'm the first to establish a climate bank that's focused strictly on building decarbonized housing. We've set up offices that are working directly with utility companies on how to better electrify and modernize the grid. So our legislators know that. They're also responsible for some of the policies that laid the groundwork for all of this. And so I'm excited about and optimistic about the opportunity and Massachusetts leadership in this space.
You know, Republican hearing this might argue that that all sounds expensive and it also may displace workers who are in industries still dependent on legacy forms of energy. How do you counter that point?
This is a jobs creator. That's what I would say. It's why we've invested in climate workforce strategies, starting in our vocational schools, even in our high schools, where we're building career pathways with a curriculum tied to jobs, where kids are getting classroom training and training outside of the classroom, on the job training, on climate-related fields in manufacturing and technology and AI. Electricians, I mean, think of the number of electricians we're going to need in a workforce for our climate workforce. So we estimate alone in Massachusetts, we're going to need about 34,000 new jobs in Massachusetts to support this industry. This is a jobs creator. It's also a reason why labor supports what I do. We've worked very hard with labor because labor has to be part of this. And part of what is going to happen is going to be a retraining or a different skilling or an upskilling in some instances of an existing workforce. So no one's going to lose jobs. And in the process, we're not only going to grow our economy, we're going to also work to solve one of our greatest sort of existential challenges that we really face, and that is climate. Money matters, as you know, and that's why we've made this investment. It's also why we've worked hard to leverage public federal dollars as well as private investments.
Let me ask you about federal dollars, because that is a key part of the equation here, I think. You know, Massachusetts is slated to get hundreds of millions of dollars for clean tech like EVs and electric buses, as well as grants and other incentives to adopt clean tech. Has that money already created jobs and attracted new businesses, done some of these things you're talking about?
Absolutely. And most recently, we were awarded $156 million from the Biden administration to support solar. We were one of the first states to map, or maybe the only state to map, where we could deploy solar in our geography. And this money is going to help us work with and incent solar companies to deploy that technology so much faster. And that's just an example. When I became governor, I established an office in the governor's office to go out and chase those federal funds, because through the CHIPS and Science Act, through the bipartisan infrastructure law, through the Inflation Reduction Act, we've got about $1 trillion in climate-related funding that the Biden administration has made available. So my goal has been to chase every single last opportunity there. And to date, we've brought back nearly $6 billion in federal funding from the Biden administration. And a significant part of that is climate related for transportation, housing, and infrastructures.
You know, my political colleagues have reported, and I want to point out that all of the money you're talking about has not yet gone out the door. I'm wondering, is that your experience? How much of that money have you seen? And is there more you think the federal government needs to do here?
Well, I think the Biden administration has done an excellent job of getting money out the door through these acts of legislation. I think for us as states, you know, we're trying to process this as quickly as possible, but we're also trying to be thoughtful about it, right? And like, what are our strategies to most effectively and wisely make these investments and where? So I'm pleased with the money that we've had come in, and I'm pleased that we've been able to get money out the door to communities and also, you know, available for, as I say, leveraging with private investments. When I think about what we're doing in housing, right? Our climate bank, that's focused on building out housing, which we need in Massachusetts. We've got high housing costs, so we need more housing. We're really focused on using that to build housing in a way that doesn't further contribute to climate change, that focuses on decarbonization. And it's really exciting, you know, what we're seeing come together through developers.
Let me ask you a question that we're talking about a lot here in Washington, but I need a Boston perspective, I guess. You know, and that's, we're in the midst of an election, and there is the potential, depending on how things go in November, for former President Donald Trump to return to the White House. Some congressional Republicans have already talked about wanting to roll back some of Biden's clean tech initiatives if that happens. How much do you worry about Trump presidency and what that would mean for these federal programs that, as you've said, seem very important?
Well, I worry a lot about it. Donald Trump sat recently with a bunch of oil and gas executives and basically asked them to pledge $1 billion towards his campaign and said to them he would give them whatever they want. That's bad. It's bad for the planet. It's bad for the economy. I mean, the fact of the matter is we know what we need to do in terms of the solutions and the technologies to address climate change, which, you know, is a huge economic imperative. I don't know your experience, but mine in talking to so many CEOs and major companies and major pension plans, major banks, major insurers, the financial risk associated with climate is so real. It's part of their calculus, and they're very, very attuned and invested in this. It's why we recently convened with corporate leaders, and they're part of an initiative by our administration to help tackle the climate issue. And I'll say that what Donald Trump has promised is essentially to take us backwards, to take us off the necessary path that we need to go. So I am worried about that.
Would that undermine the work you're doing?
It has the potential. And that's just one of the reasons why we can't let Donald Trump be in office. You know, we can't let him near that office, because I think about where we are right now as a state. You know, Massachusetts, we're number one in the country in venture capital per capita. We are home to the nation's first offshore wind farm. 25 of Time Magazine's top green tech companies are based in Massachusetts. The investments that have come through the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, through the Inflation Reduction Act, and through CHIPS and Science are game-changing, not just for Massachusetts, but frankly for our world in terms of, you know, the health and well-being of residents, not just here in America, but literally around the world. So I do worry about that, Stephen, because, you know, Donald Trump has surrounded himself by people who are only interested in furthering the power of oil and gas and the fossil fuel industry, which is the industry that's gotten us into this in the first place. I, as Attorney General, I mean, was the one who sued ExxonMobil for lying to us for 40 years about what their product was doing, right?
Right.
And it's a shame because we lost all that time. ExxonMobil had some of the best scientists in the world. And instead of putting them to use, figuring out a renewable strategy earlier, they were just interested in making money. And, you know, which isn't bad to make money, but at the expense of and exploiting the planet in the process and lying, literally lying with the earliest and one of the earlier campaigns about disinformation that we've ever seen. So that's not a world I want to go back to. And it's certainly a world that Donald Trump lives in.
Is that a message that you think should be talked about more on the campaign trail? Because it does seem climate has been drowned out in some ways by a lot of other political issues right now. And I wonder if that should be a bigger focus in your view.
I think it's something to talk about. I think it's certainly a distinction. There are a lot of distinctions between a Biden presidency and a Trump presidency. We already know what a Trump presidency will look like. I mean, Trump, if there's anything you can say about him, he's true to his word. Believe him when he says that he's going to dismantle the Department of Justice, that he's going to have the largest deportation mission in history, that he's going to let oil and gas companies and fossil fuels get whatever they want. I mean, he told us he was going to overturn Roe v. Wade, and he told us he was going to pack the Supreme Court, and he did. And now we deal with the consequences of that, right? So I think we need to continue to draw the distinctions in this area of climate and climate technology and the important and imperative investments we need to make in this space and the difference that that looks like under a Trump presidency.
Got it. And I guess, you know, you'd obviously talk to a lot of folks in Massachusetts about this issue and see how it plays out there. Is this a message that you think Americans and voters would respond well to that they need to hear?
You know, I got to tell you, it's really interesting. You see a lot of investment, too, in red states when it comes to clean energy. You know, I talked to a lot of Republican governors, and there are any number of companies that are doing business in their states, solar, wind interests that are big. So I think that's a reflection of the recognition that this is where we need to go. The investment community knows this is where we need to go, right? And so, you know, I think that that's worth pointing out, that it's not simply a blue state, red state issue. It's something that, you know, there's opportunity for everybody. And frankly, there's necessity for everyone, because as I talk to governors, there is not a state right now in our country that isn't impacted by climate change. Some are dealing with forest fires. Some are dealing with droughts. Some are dealing with things like tornadoes or hurricanes that they've never seen before in their states, right? So everybody's dealing with it, which is why everybody has an interest in solving it.
Well, Governor Healey, thank you for joining us on Politico Tech.
Great to be with you.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. See you back here on Monday.